What's up? It's your boy 911 and you tuned in to ABG Podcast. As always, man, you know how we do it. Let's get to it. So today, man, we got we know who in the finals now for the NBA championship. We got Golden State Warriors representing the West, Boston Celtics representing the East. First off, before we get into that, let me give Jimmy Butler his flowers. Because Jimmy Butler, you the one bull that got away. And I was like, damn, I wish we could have held on to Jimmy Buckets. But that's neither here nor there. You gone, you've been doing your thing, you know. Other teams around the league with, what is that, Minnesota. You played a little bit with them. You did your thing. I don't think you vibe too well with Wiggins. And now in Miami, you know, you found a home with Pat Riley. Says you that type of player, though. Tough, hard-nosed. They know what they're going to get out you every night. Maximum effort. And can't do nothing but salute a guy like that. So shout-out Jimmy Butler, man, before we really get all the way into this finals matchup. But anyway, so we got Golden State, Boston Celtics. Now, I'll be honest with you. Back in the day, I didn't really vibe with Boston Celtics like that during, like, the Larry Bird era. Like, I respect the Larry Bird. You know, you had Robert Parrish, you know, guys like that, Kevin McHale, DJ, Dennis Johnson, and all like that. Like, don't get me wrong. Hell of an era. And you got the all-time great Bill Russell. Hell of an era. They got a historic franchise, put it like that. They got legends and GOATs throughout the career. But to me, and it's just, you know, outside looking in, it was more of like a white brand of basketball for me growing up. So I didn't really pull for Boston like that going on because, you know, like it had Magic Johnson, Showtime Lakers. That was more of like just my persona and, you know, what I seen around the way in on the courts either in my backyard or where we going to hoop at. A little more movement and razzle-dazzle to the game. So I was more intrigued with, you know, those type of franchises early on growing up. So I was never really a Boston fan until they put together the original Big Three. And I couldn't do this segment without touching on the original Big Three. That was Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen. Now, see, where this Big Three right here differs from, like, later on when, you know, LeBron and them tried to do it. And not tried to do it. They did it successfully. They won championships with the Heat, multiple championships with the Heat. What it was, two? But where this Big Three differed from that Big Three, the original Big Three, to me, were guys that, and even with, like, LeBron and them, they had to, you know, accept a role. But these were guys that were all number ones at one time in their career that their talents had kind of diminished down to where they were still starters, still legitimate players in the league. But they weren't a true, like, number one, per se. I think Paul Pierce at the time, the truth, might have been still a legitimate number one. So they did have that game closer, that dagger type player when those moments arise. So, and KG, straight energy. No matter from year one to however long he played today, you knew what he was getting out of KG. Straight energy. A dog. Most fierce competitor, shit, besides Jordan, probably that I've witnessed, but the way he just went about breaking his opponents down, whether in their head, being physical, you had that going. Then you had Ray Allen. Now, before Steph came along, I ain't gonna lie, Reggie Miller was probably the most deadliest shooter that I had seen that didn't mind. But as far as sweetest looking shot, it was like Ken Griffey swinging on the baseball field, you know, with the left hand. You know, he had that sweet stroke. That's how Ray Allen jumper was. It's like poetry in motion when he pull up, rise up. Balance, release, form, perfect jump. I hadn't seen nothing like that. Just when it came to a true, pure jump shot. So that was his calling card with that big three. Now, people don't get it twisted. That's what Ray Allen left out the league as. When that boy first walked in, when he was Baby Jesus and playing Baby Jesus, not Baby Jesus, but you know the movie he played in, shit, I forget the name. But that Ray Allen, when he was with the Seattle Supersonics, a dog. Driving to the wreck, taking it up on you, bringing you out, shooting the jumper, you bite too close, pull up game, like he was the complete package. So don't think of what you left as what he left out as, is that was Ray Allen's total package. He had a complete bag when he came in the league and was a good defender. So when that original big three got put together, it was like, that big three to me was like the ultimate number one. It was like having that killer number one in one, that you got in one player, but you got it from three guys. So that was like the perfect big three. Now, the LeBron and big three, I thought that was the cheat code. I'm just be honest. I thought that was the cheat code. Because those were players that I thought that were still legitimate number ones in their prime. That's why I wanted to say that's where that differed to me. But same results in game. They both held up the championship trophy. That's what you set out the season to do. But now you have the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics, and what's going to make this matchup, because that big three there is what kind of brought me around to Boston. That's why I was talking about the original big three. I kind of pulled for them in that area. Not pulled for them, but I didn't hate them as much. I'll say that. I didn't hate them. Because they were all three guys I actually liked. Ray, KG, and Paul. I liked their game. I just liked them. Even though, like I say, for the majority of the time, Paul, his whole career, it was, to the end, a little stint with the Clippers. But they were in the Eastern Conference, and, you know, I'm a straight Bulls fan. I tell everybody this. Win, lose, or draw, I'm riding with Chi-Town. That was from Mike since retirement till now. Still a Bulls fan. But they were all kind of Eastern Conference, so I seen them play a lot too. But I just like their games. I'm not the type of fan that I pull for a team and I'm just hating everybody. I love to see individual talent and what guys bring to other teams. So I might not like your team, but I might tell you more about a player on your team than you know. So I'm one of them tight sports fans. But that's what kind of brought me around to the Celtics, because at first I hated them. And now with this Celtics squad, fast forward, I like Tatum. I like Jaylen Brown. I like Marcus Smart. I like their coach. I even like the coach they had before that. And they always, you know, play good team ball. And you know what you're going to get from. But this is the thing. Speaking of team ball, this is where Jason Tatum is going to have to prove he is who we think he is, or who he thinks he is. I seen him with the Kobe wristband on last night. R.I.P. Kobe. That's a nice tribute to Kobe. I know Kobe is his favorite player, so this is where he gets to move his name into that conversation with the Kobes, the LeBrons, the Mikes, the D-Wades. You're in the finals now, Jay. And your talent is there. They want to put you in that conversation now because they see what you can do. And now, this is the stage where you get to prove it on. Jaylen Brown, because you got a hell of a front runner with you, a sidekick with you, with Jaylen Brown. You got Marcus Smart, a dog. You know what he do. He used to play with, shout out Markel Brown, A-Town fam, 318. all that OU. So I've been watching his game for a long time. I actually worked with his aunt out here in Dallas for a minute. But this is where Jason Tatum will either become who we think he is or be like, nah, he not ready. Because one thing about the NBA, you get to redeem yourself from year to year. So we're going to get to see, because you got to go against that juggernaut over there with Steph, Klay, Jordan Poole, Dre, big loony man in the paint. They got a squad. They deep. They can throw guys at you almost all the way to the 12 man. I think they might have tapped the 12 man and let them get run. And they're just that deep. They're just that talented of a team. That's what makes them so dangerous. Especially when you have a superstar like Steph that plays so unselfish. And here's the thing with Jason Tatum and Steph Curry about legacies and about this NBA final. Steph is the perfect example of carving your own lane, and it'll be less traffic. Because just my opinion, win, lose, or draw, I think Steph's legacy of where he's going to go down as the all-time greats is only going to move up like one or two, maybe over the course of the remainder of his career. But the thing is, this is why. Before the Steph Currys, basketball, like if you're old enough to me, like I said, I'll be 43 this year. But if you've been watching basketball and sports as long as me, early on in basketball, it was the premier bigs that won. Like back in the day, like I say, with the Wilt Chamberlains, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, Patrick Ewing's back in the day, you know, Akeem Olajuwon's. And I'm going to leave a bunch of great centers out. Robert Parrish. Man, Ralph Sampson. The list can go on and on. But the league, you know, was predicated on big man play. Finding you a big, building around that. Then, right around the Jordan era, the premier wing player took over. That's when you had the Jordans, the Clyde Drexlers, the Dominique Wilkins, the human highlight. If you don't remember Dominique, because I know you kind of know about Jordan, that's MJ, that's the GOAT. I don't think we give Dominique his flowers enough like he should for that era that he was really putting in work with Atlanta. Number 21, kids, if you haven't heard of Dominique Wilkins, his nickname was the Human Highlight Fam. That should be all I need to tell you. Go Google Dominique Wilkins and watch the work he was putting in Atlanta. When I say dude was sick. But anyway, that's about the time around the league where the premier wing player, that's when you start, teams start building with, you get you a serviceable big man. Your James Edwards type guys back in the days. The big Vlades, the Bulls had the three-headed monster, Cartwright. Longland, Bill Winnington. So you had serviceable big men, and you match them up with the premier wings. Like Drexler played on the wing with, you know, Terry Porter and Duckworth and guys like that on his team, man in the paint. So that's around the time where the game changed and evolved into that. And they had dogs at guards, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they didn't have dogs at guards too in other positions, but the premier position, your number ones. Early on, it was the center. Those were the number ones. That was your number one option. Trying to feed the man stuff to paint all night. Who had the best bid? Second era, that's when you had the premier wing. You had the guy that could create his own shot. Rose up, they feel like, okay, that was a better option. You built around that. That was that era. We've moved into the era now where it's still the premier wing, because it's always going to be that point forward, point, you know, shooting guard slash body, the 6'5", 6'6". But Steph made it okay to build your team around a one. It had never really truly been done before. So that's why you get the Dame Lillards, the Trae Youngs, and you get the guys like that. They get the opportunities they have because Steph showed, okay, you can build from the outside in versus from the inside out, which is always, you know, the way the NBA had went about building teams. So now you had Steph Curry, who was in range as he got out the car, wherever he parked it at the gym. He's a threat from right there that revolutionized the game as far as shot making, shot taking, and the creativity to get those shots off. So his legacy, it is what it is. And he was the first to do that. He brought forth a new era of basketball. So his legacy is what it is. He's going to be somewhere in that mid-tier of legends when it all said and done, when he writes his career. No matter how many he wins, it's going to be mid-tier. But Jason Tatum, he's in that rare air space. He's that 6'9 frame, 6'10. That's the LeBrons. Kobe was 6'7, 6 Jordan, 6'6. The premier wings. Those are truly, because just think, Jordan got 6 rings. Bill Russell got 13. But we never talk about Bill Russell, well, not as much, because some of the old heads will let you know, like, nah. How can you talk about Bill without the greats and he got 13? Or how can you talk about Kareem not being the great and he won on every level? From shit, little league, high school, college, and the pros. But that's not the narrative. The narrative is that premier wing, the create your own shot, can handle the ball. The Magic Johnsons, Birds, those are who we put in the conversation. Like, that's who we want the greats to be. The guys that can create, play multiple positions, defend multiple positions, and close games. Because you got to think, with the center, you're dependent on getting somebody the ball to you. Now, this new age centers, those boys can handle the ball in this position in basketball. You got 7-footers coming down now, Euro-stepping, crossing you up, pulling up. So, different conversation for a different day. But the premier wing is where you make your bread these days, or where your name get etched as the all-time great. So Jason Tatum is in the part now, and yeah, I said Kobe. So Jason Tatum is in the space now where he can now start etching his name, start sketching the J of where he's going to be on that picking order. And I hadn't forgot about KD. KD, that's another thing. You're in that space with him too. That's who you're getting compared against. So right now, where I think Jason Tatum is, and this is me personally, I know Kobe's his favorite player. With his talent, he need to dial a little bit more into that Mamba mentality. This podcast getting the hand of Jason Tatum. If you dial into a little bit more of that selfish mentality, and understanding that no matter what the play is, you are the best option. That's what sometimes I think, well, you know, the debate with Jordan and LeBron got off track, because, you know, people like, he made the right play. But sometimes when you know of lesser talent, your worst shot is better than some guy's best shot because of your talent level. So when you have great talent, that's a responsibility that come with it. So yeah, kicking it to a guy, like if you're kicking it to Ray Allen, shit, that's money in the bank. But if you're kicking it to a guy, role players, and not Jordan, of course, he kicked it to guys too. Like Steve Kerr, that was their role. And you know, you have guys that your role. But for the most part, you want your best player to be your first, second, and sometimes your third option. And the pass is your last option, not your first option. Because their talent warrants that. You'll live and die with that miss or that make from them. And it's only a special group of guys that want that mic in their face after that miss shot. And that's not a knock. Everybody just not built for that. And that's okay. So Jason Tatum, it's a few times where I think all fans outside looking in, probably some Boston fans even more so than us, think you can give it a little extra oomph because you got it. The talent, your wingspan, your shot, inside, outside, you are a matchup nightmare. So this is going to be a real interesting series, man. I'm waiting to see what my boy Tatum going to do because he a dog. I got faith in him, but I love Steph's game. Like I say, revolutionized the game. Undersized guy. Get his own shots. Jump away. So I'm picking Golden State. I'm predicting it goes 7. But I don't know. It could be 6. But I'm still riding with Golden State. Because here's the thing. So the thing is, if you notice in the past, the teams that used to frustrate Golden State the most were like Milwaukee. Because even before Milwaukee became this Milwaukee, when they were the younger version of Milwaukee, they always had long athletic players that could switch on everything. That were athletic enough to switch on everything. Boston has that. That's why I think it'll go 7. Because with the Golden State offense, as good as a player Steph is, revolutionized the game, he can create his own shot, but that team is a system. It's so many back cuts. You're watching Steph and he'll run through, stop, set a pick for Klay that's coming around off of like a slingshot pick from the other side of the court through the baseline, back on the other side of the court through this pick. Steph set up for a jump and he wide open. I'm tired saying that, processing that. So imagine that every time down court, you running off back screens, picks, 3 and 4 screens. A guy stopped through a pick, cut back out. Now he's the primary option in that play. You're dealing with that and processing that all night, every night with them. Constant movement. So if you don't have the athleticism, and that's why I think Dallas got caught up. They had too many people with heavy feet. It is what it is. You got heavy feet, you're not keeping up with Golden State. Them boys walk light. And within that, they have players that can create their own shot, but are unselfish enough to keep the ball moving within that system. So they're a dangerous team. But on the other hand, Boston might have just enough athleticism across the board of guys that can throw and switch your feet, because you have to be able to switch your feet. I was watching them play the other day, and Marcus and Tatum was switching, and Jimmy Butler was going through the paint. And as he got to a certain point, Marcus pointed him off. Tatum picked him up and ran across with him the other rest of the way, and Marcus went up top. If they can communicate like that on all those switching, now the Heat don't move quite as much because, I mean, just say the Heat half-court offense damn sure ain't Golden State. But if they can communicate something like that and stay with the Golden State with all the movement, that's when they have a chance. Because they are long, they are athletic. And then on the other side, Boston have guys that can create their own shot. So that's why I say this is the time where Tatum is going to have to show us who he really is. And I believe he could do it. I like that youngster, man. He got a hell of a game. So that's my prediction, man. Golden State in 7. But a good series throughout. I think we're going to learn a lot about that Boston team that we got questions about. And we're going to see if the old heads, man, if Golden, not even old heads, because they done revamped their team. We're going to see if the new look Golden State can, turn over these 40 and then one more game. see if they can run that thing back. They said they was coming back when they got everybody healthy. And I'm glad to see Clay back, man. He been, and I could tell early on, you know, he was kind of pressing the issue because he wanted to be Clay so bad. And just to see him back on the court was refreshing to me, man. Just seeing him perform and be out there with his brothers and just seeing the look of just being happy on his face. Man, I like seeing those youngsters out there doing their thing, man, making money, just enjoying life, doing something that they love. So as always, man, I thank you for tuning in, man. You know you can catch me on IG, AVG_podcast_9_11. Catch me on there, man. I'll be posting stuff even outside of the, you know, the podcast or what be going on with me. You know, we're going on sometime with fam, other world events. So follow me on there, man. Keep up with me. And as always, man, always visualize your goals. And after that, accomplish those visualized goals. 9/11. Gone.